This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to FM 2.0 Forever Music. I am the Don. I've got the great Dean with me, Dean Baldwin, as heard on Sirius XM. And if you haven't heard him on Sirius XM, you can catch him on like three channels, and he's amazing. I know a lot of people that will listen, and it's phenomenal. You've even had artists, Dean, just as a side note, you've even had artists call you afterward going, hey, I just heard that bit, right? Didn't something like that? Yeah. See. So there he is. And we got the great Gowan here. How you doing, Lawrence?
Hi. Never better. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Dean. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Great, man. First off, it's an honor to have you. I mean, and then going back through your music, we're going to talk about your shows coming up in Vegas, which is really exciting.
Great.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to point out real quick, just for anybody that didn't know, when you had, we're going just under Gowan, and you had a song called Moonlight Desires.
Yes.
Which is a beautiful song, especially when you get to the pre-chorus course. What was that like when, the story goes, John Anderson was walking by and heard you recording it, and he's like, I'd like to get in on that. Is that what happened?
Well, that's close. Not exactly. He was in the studio next to us recording a song with, I think it was with Tangerine Dream for the movie Legend. It was in Los Angeles. We were in this studio there in Hollywood, on Hollywood Boulevard in LA. And the producer who produced Great Dirty World was the album that song is on. David Tickle, he was working on engineering, I think, or producing that track with John Anderson. And as he was kind of setting the speakers one morning, he was playing my previous album, which was called Strange Animal. And John heard it and he liked it. He said, oh, who's this? And he said, Gowan, this is an artist from Canada that I just did. This album just went triple platinum in Canada. And John's like, oh, let me hear more. So he said, so he listened to it a bit and apparently he liked it. So David told me that. And then the next day he played him the bed track that we had for Moonlight Desires. And I had my vocal on there and everything. And he was kind of scat singing. And that night we went out to dinner and he said, I really like that song that you're working on, Moonlight Desires. I said, thanks very much. I was trying to hold back my, my extreme fanboyishness about, I was trying to retain that and just kind of just have a regular conversation. And he said, I was singing along to it. And I said, we were going to put a guitar solo in the middle of that song. Instead of that, why don't you come in and do a vocal solo, just kind of scat something. And he did a couple of days. The next day he and I went to an LA Dodgers game together and we kind of just chatted a bit and we listened to the song and the cassette and the car. And then the next day he came into the studio. And yeah, that's why he does that whole do 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 do, just kind of as if it was a instrumental solo in the middle of the song. And a few months later, when the song came out, or it was about to come out, we were going to do a video for it, and I thought it'd be great to use the Mayan pyramids in Mexico. So I called him; he was in England and at the time, and I said, "Would you like to come to Mexico and do the video for Moonlight Desires? We'll do it on the Mayan pyramids." And he said, I was just speaking to my channeler earlier this week. I don't know what a channeler is. And she said, someone's going to invite you to a warm climate and you should go. And wow. He showed up and then we quickly kind of cobbled together the concept. He's dressed as a Toltec or Mayan kind of god on top of the pyramid. I'm on the pyramid.
It's a great video. Thanks.
Long answer there, but yes, thank you very much. That's how we got together.
Oh, that's so great. Well, Your vocals are great. I mean, John's obviously are just out of this world as well. Great. So that was just one of those things. We're both big Yes guys. And knowing that you did that together, that was just a special thing I had to bring up.
Yeah. I still am in awe of the fact that that came together so beautifully.
Look at that. I need to get a channeler. So it sounds like I need.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there you are. You got Styx playing the great Venetian. I went to the Venetian once in my life. Right just before the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
Great place. Now, you're playing inside the Venetian.
Right? Yes. Yes.
And it's going to be January 26th, 27th, 31st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Correct. Of February. Yes.
Nights in Vegas with Lawrence Gowan and the band. That's going to be fun.
This will be probably, I think, our fifth residency there, fourth or fifth. The theater was originally built for the Phantom of the Opera musical, but it is so it's such a great theater, you know, and it sounds great. It looks amazing in the place. And we really enjoy doing it, quite honestly, you know, to stay in one location and have people from, you know, around the world really come to it year after year has been really, it's a great way to start the year. And we've done it, as I say, I think we started our first one there was in 2017, something like that, or 2018. Yeah. And so this will be, I think, our fourth or fifth. Sorry, I can't turn off these notifications.
No, don't worry about it.
I thought it was mine.
Hey, it just means that, you know, you're still alive. People are notifying you of things.
Well, mostly people just want to sell me things. Yeah.
Oh, that too. That is. So again, you're going to be in Vegas. That's going to be great. Tickets are on sale now. Great. And go there, Ticketmaster. The Venetian Las Vegas. So that's just amazing. Getting into your tour. And Dean, if you've got anything you want to say, just interrupt me.
I'll jump in here in a moment. I'm waiting for you to tee something up. I'm listening.
Okay. We're going to tee it up. Let's see what tees it up for you. All right. So first of all, you know, going through the set list you've been doing, when you're doing a 5-night stay, you're going to switch up your set list, or do you do the same one every night?
No, well, for a Styx show, you're never going to see a Styx show that doesn't include Renegade and Now Mr. Roboto and Fooling Yourself and Too Much Time in My Hands, Come Sail Away, Grand Illusion. Those are in every show.
You know? Staples, yeah.
Yeah, those are, yeah, those are songs that we, you know, it's mandatory that we play those because they're giant hits. But the funny thing is, as the audience keeps skewing younger, we find it, we can broaden the material as far as the choices that we have, because a lot of when I say younger people, I mean people who are under 40, so they weren't born when these classic rock records were made, but they have, they embrace it as if it's entirely concurrent with their lives. They have not been inundated with the radio airplay that the other pieces I just mentioned, you know, helped to elevate. So for many of them, you know, there was someone just last night, we were playing in another spot in Oklahoma here. And I know there was a couple of people that were yelling out for Queen of Spades, which is, you know, we do that occasionally, but that's what we do. We'll rotate in, say Queen of Spades or Man in the Wilderness, or let's see now, what else is rotating lately? You know, the songs from Crash of the Crown, because that album has done extremely well for us. One or two of those will make it into every night, but we rotate those as well. Other ones would be, for example, let me think now for a second. Lorelei is one that's kind of coming back.
I love that one. Your keyboard playing on that is out of this world. When I watched you perform, a lot of times your back's to the audience, so everybody's seeing you on the keyboard.
Yeah, I started that pivoting keyboard, rotating keyboard back in 1990. It was actually built to be a prop in a video. I had a video, again, going back to my previous, my Styx life, in my solo years, I had an album called Lost Brotherhood, and on the title track, on the whole album, actually, Alex Lifeson was the guitarist. So,
nice.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate with some of the people I've gotten to work with. And Alex, he had this great scene in the video where he steps out of this kind of smoking barn. It was kind of like an Animal Farm concept we had. And I just thought this piano is so boring. We got to come up with something quick. And so we came up with the rotating keyboard. And then several people there, Alex included, and our band and a bunch of the video people said, are you going to take that on stage? And I hadn't considered it at the time, but I thought I got more and more adept at kind of working it. And I loved the idea that I could see the whole audience. So, yeah. So when I joined Styx, they said, hey, where's the spinning thing? Ever since.
All right, so here's my lead in then, because that was the opening. You've had a great solo career. You've obviously worked with incredible musicians.
Yeah.
And I'm always fascinated by the bands that came out of an era with a very set lineup. You stepped into an iconic band, into an iconic role. Mm. Is that a big decision? Did you go into it thinking, wow, do I want to do this? Am I going to set myself up to be a target? Or was that really never, because you do a phenomenal job. It's your band.
Well, thank you, Dean. You actually are right. You know, people do say, you know, you must have jumped at that, you know. If it weren't for a couple of major factors, I wouldn't have just jumped into it. You know, the career I had prior to Styx, I really loved doing that. You know, in fact, I'm doing more of it next week because I do a whole solo tour. But, you know, I had 4 platinum albums, 3 gold, a gold single. I had, you know, Juno Awards, et cetera. And the previous year to joining Styx, I started working a lot in England because I was born in Scotland. And so I was allowed to work there with my British passport. Sorry. And during that time, funny enough, though, I was doing a tour with the Stranglers and opening for them, solo piano. And we did a whole tour of the UK. And by the end of the middle of that year, I got invited to come and go and play at Princess Diana's, the opening of her memorial, actually, at her home, an original piece that I played with the BBC London Symphony Orchestra. Wow. And curiously enough, Todd Sirkeman was at that show. He was playing, not with Styx, I assumed he was with the Styx, but because there was Duran Duran, there was on the bill, Duran Duran, Sir Cliff Richard, and a big contributor to Diana's charities and a big kind of musical star in Germany is David Hasselhoff, and Todd was hired to play for him for just that one show. Wow. And when he saw me, he went, hey man, you did a couple of shows with Styx last year. I played in Montreal and in Quebec City with them. You know, I was doing on a solo piano tour, just no band, just me on piano. And I said, how are things going? He goes, yeah, pretty good. We're working on a new record, but I could see there's something, you know, he was holding back a wee bit. And then at the same time, my publicist in England said, I think you're going to wind up joining a band because a bunch of bands here have, you know, they're looking for new players and you would slot in well since your solo career never, you know, really took off in other countries other than Canada, because that's where I was released. She said, I could see that happening. And I thought, that's not going to happen. I don't want to do it.
Right.
Right. Period. I went home. And like literally just weeks later, I got a call from Tommy Shaw and James Young. And what struck me was I was like, wow, this is exactly what Judy was saying would happen. And it's kind of, and I thought, could the universe be telling me something? Maybe I should consult my channeler.
Right.
I better get one quick. Yeah. So, but no, I then reflected on the fact that when I never seen Styx live until the shows that I did with them. And I thought they were great. That's the thing that really stuck with me. And I'd met them all and I liked them, you know, and I just felt an instant kind of rapport and a kind of a simpatico vibe. And I said, well, let's test it out. And then JY says, let's get in a room together, see if our voices blend. Okay. So like literally 2 days later, I flew down to, Tommy's place, and we started singing together, and JY, they all just commented, yeah, let's proceed. And that's 25 years ago now.
I've seen Styx with you. I've seen Styx with Dennis. I don't know if I can say this, but it feels like there's a really strong chemistry with you and the rest of the band that honestly, I
I think what happens with a band is the spirit of a band has to survive a member change. I've said this before, but I really do believe it more and more now.
There's
an entity to a band, a spirit to it, if you want to call it that, that exists outside any individual member and is really part of the collective thing. And I think what Styx were able to do with every time they were faced with a seismic change that they had to make. I mean, look, they'd done their fifth album and had their first real success when suddenly, you know, right at the brink of that, their guitarist John Cerulski left the band, but Tommy Shaw walked in the door. You see, so that's pretty amazing. When Tommy was out of the band doing Damn Yankees, Glenn Burtnick came in, and he was in the band the first 5 years I was in, and they survived it. And I think, you know, it's inevitable that I suppose the backstage dramas turned into something that they were just irreconcilable, I guess, before they decided to make the call. And when I came in, I kind of, I don't know, I because I wasn't part of any of that, I guess I came in with a fresh approach in a way, and I was ready to throw myself into it.
I love it. It keeps the music alive. It even keeps the new music. And the Crash of the Crowns, the Hold Back the Darkness. I love that song. I love that one.
Yeah. Strong piece.
You know, and that it just comes to show, like, there's a couple of tracks that where I really feel it, like Lorelei.
Yeah.
When you perform that, that is one of those that immediately you feel that industry. JY had a co-write in that.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that, you know, that's one song because, you know, JY was a co-writer that when you come in and perform it, and you just vibe off each other so well.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeah. We click well. One, he also wrote on Rock in the Paradise.
That's the other one I was going to bring up, that you guys, your chemistry on that. And you know, throughout the show, there's great chemistry, but there's something about when you perform those songs, you just feel an extra thing. Like Rock of the Paradise is off the charts.
Yeah, that's fun to do, I gotta tell you.
It really is. I mean, my goodness gracious. I mean, another thing I wanted to bring up is I was watching, you know, I was digging, watch the videos and on Fooling Yourself, right?
Yeah.
There's a couple, at least in one performance I watched where Tommy comes over at the acoustic and you guys are just making eye contact together.
Yeah.
I always wanted to know, like, in a live performance like that, and you're looking at Tommy's looking at you, looking at him, what's going through your mind at that point? Are you syncing up or?
What a great question. That's really good. I'm going to drop another name. A guy I worked with on All Might, I'm going to tell you, with my solo records, Tony Levin is the bass player on every one of my albums, actually. And Tony had this thing in the studio, and Jerry Marotta was drumming with us, where I noticed that they would lock eyes, you know? And so I got in on that, you know, I like this kind of lock eyes thing because it's in regular life, it's uncomfortable kind of in a way when you lock eyes with, you know, if you're not saying anything, but something happens when you're playing music together that if you do that, it's like a Mr. Spock thing. It's like a mind meld, you know, like something happens that is inexplicable. It's like singing harmony with someone at the same time. You know, if it's really chiming well, you really are a kind of a unified entity in that moment. And so I think it's a really powerful thing in music to do that. I'm going to say one of the things, I'd hate to give advice, but one of the things that kind of distracted me in a way in the 90s, where a lot of bands were into looking straight down at the floor.
Shoegazing.
That was it. Shoegazing.
Yeah.
Which I thought, yeah, you guys look really cool, but you know, the locking eyes thing is really, you might be surprised how effective that can be when you're playing music. Yeah. And you're right. At the end of Fooling Yourself, Tom usually comes across, and during that keyboard solo, which I try to keep as strict to the album as possible, is kind of just a great moment of this kinetic joy going on, you know, and the audience feed off that.
Yeah. I mean, I pick up on it right away, and I always wonder what's going through your minds. There's not, it's just more of just this connection and like a, Yeah, like you knew each other's musical soul at that point, connected as one, right? Thing happens. You're talking about shoegazing. I think the same thing happens when you're a front man, really, as a keyboard player. But when you come off and you're acting as a front man, you make contact. I see you making eye contact with the fans too. You're doing the same thing with the audience. You don't. Yeah. You engage them.
Yeah, it's because music is a language, right? And speaking to someone else with this language, we don't understand why it works so well. You know, the great Beethoven quote was that he doesn't even know what it is at the end of his life. He goes, "What is it? It's just, it's a noise." But somehow it has this power to emotionally, you know, move us. And I really do enjoy looking at audience people. Even sometimes they don't have to be all, it's not always the most effusive people, although I love engaging with them because, you know, you can really ramp it up. But sometimes there are people in audiences at rock shows who I see at the beginning of shows sitting like this. Mm-hmm. And this is going to, I don't want this to sound immodest, but Styx have this incredible capacity to bring people from this to like this, right? They're by the end of the show, they're like anyone else. And I don't mind, at least initially, if I can make an eye contact with them early on in the show, kind of connecting with them in some way and trying to see just how long it's going to take before this completely disappears and they throw themselves into it. And I think the reason for that is a great rock show is just the greatest form of entertainment there is. And I think it's almost impossible to contain yourself if it's really, I mean, I can't contain myself. I just saw Peter Gabriel last month. I mean, I was out of my mind, you know, loving it.
It's funny that you just mentioned Peter Gabriel, because Todd Zuckerman, that you were mentioning before, I've had him on the show, and he actually wrote an album. And I told him that I hear so much Peter Gabriel in your music, and he almost fell off his chair. He's like, he's like my favorite artist. I can't believe you heard that.
Yeah, you know, I do want to point out real quick though, the skill set of a great front person is the ability to work the crowd as if they are a member of the band. I think about, you know, one of the best front persons I've ever worked with. I mean, he showed over and over he could work the crowd, even hard crowd, very cold crowds.
Yeah,
he warmed them up. So being able to have that contact, looking at them, you're directing them in the same way you're directing the band.
In a lot of ways, you are. I mean, it's it's a bit like. Well, there's actually nothing I can really compare it to. It's like it just begins to happen that you're connecting, and at least with the majority of people out there, there's probably a few out there that you're not connecting with every night. But the majority, there's a few thousand people. Let's put it that way. That suddenly you're all in this. You're all looking in the same direction in real time. You know, you can't. It's these are moments you just can't download, despite how long they want to hold their phones up. It doesn't convey the same connection that a great live show can do.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's funny you say that, holding the phone up, does that take a little bit of something away when you look out there and you see a whole bunch of people holding the phones up?
Not anymore. Honestly, not anymore. Initially it was, you know, because they were holding up iPads at a certain point, you know, like this, you know, that seems to have dissipated. But no, it doesn't, funny enough. I began to, it never really bothered me. Some of the other guys, it was an irritation too. And I know plenty of other artists that have told me they hate it or they hated it. But then I thought, no, this is a new version of holding up your lighter or, you know, throwing the horns or whatever it is. It's just a new version of that. And so a good number of years ago, I thought one night, you know, someone's holding their phone. I got close enough that I was able to take it from them and walk up on stage and do a little bit of a quick little video of the band.
Cool. You made somebody's night.
And then that started a whole thing where there was this, I remember, it got out there that, oh, look at this video, because you're social media, you know. And a few nights later, there's a lady in Buffalo, which is just across from Toronto where I live. And a lady comes up front and she's videoing like this, like crazy. And she looks up at me, and we the lock eyes thing. And I'm like, hey, you know, but she was too far away for me to get her to grab her phone and try the same thing, because I knew she wanted me to do that. She's holding it out and I can't reach it. She throws the phone at me. Luckily, I catch it. Do a little video, toss it back to her, and she gets it. A couple of years go by. We're playing Buffalo again. I should learn her name. She's right up front, and I'm like, oh, that's the phone lady. That's the phone lady. Wham! It comes again. This time I notice the screen is completely broken, shattered into a million pieces. I thought she's been doing this a little too often. Yeah.
She's throwing like bands and that stuff. That's great.
Well, that was just something that I thought about really deeply for the first time recently. I was at a Steve Hackett concert and I was noticing all the people watching the concert through the phone. And it's the first time I went, is that kind of disrespectful? Because you're not actually watching the show, you're watching it through the phone. So I don't know if that's, you know, that's why I asked the question. I wasn't sure how artists take that.
It's different for everyone. I'm so accustomed to it now. I'll admit something. Early on, I was kind of like, what, you know, you shouldn't do that so much, you know, and I wouldn't do that at a show. Well, sure enough, I think it was 2014, 2013, maybe. So 10 years ago, I'm seeing the Rolling Stones. And I got a great seat. And, right when they did the catwalk around the front of the stage, they were able to come up. So they're close to people on the floor. And I was right there. And, you know, so Keith comes by. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is great. You know, I'm not going to do the phone thing. You know, I'm not interested in that. But I'm thinking, yeah, it's in my pocket, though. This would be a good shot. Okay. Ron Wood comes by. I'm thinking, oh, man, this is really good. And we're kind of, he's leaning in, and Mick comes by, and as he's looking at me, pointing, you know, going like this, and I think it was Sympathy for the Devil. He's going, yeah.
Oh, man.
Shining, Zahn and his miss, Anastasia screamed in vain. And I'm like, shit.
Real quick, great imitation, by the way.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Not the best either.
I tell you, you know, I think that's the thing is if you get the phone out and then the artist grabs it, there's your moment, right? Like you made it for that lady, but
yeah.
I mean, look, I've done it too. There's moments you want to capture, but recording the whole concert on the phone, I've seen people.
Yeah, I've seen people do that.
It's like, you're not even there. I mean, you're there, but you're not there. It's
you're weird. One step removed. That is a danger is that you,
yeah.
I mean, I took maybe 10 seconds of Mick.
Yeah, but, exactly.
But yeah, the entire show is a little much. However, funny enough, as much as I don't like that,
you watch concerts.
It's funny with technology. There's always a flip side to it. There was a guy that videoed from the, I believe it was from the Greek amphitheater. He videoed the entire show of the Monkees the last time that Mike Nesmith were with them on stage with Mickey Dolenz. And I saw, oh, it's on YouTube. Oh yeah, Monkees show. And Mickey and Mike Nesmith had just left the planet a few days earlier. And this was like just a couple of weeks before he died. And sure enough, I clicked on it and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And so I thank that anonymous person for ruining his show, but letting me watch it.
Well, that's what you're just saying. They're taking it for the team, right? They're going to record it and we get to watch it.
In a way. So there's, like I say, there's a duality of ways that you can look at things. Sometimes it's the most, you know, we it's easy to say, oh, you videoed the whole show. It wasn't like you were, it's like you weren't even there. But on the other hand, he may have wanted to take that home and show someone that couldn't make it to the show. So, you know, you have to kind of keep an open mind.
Can I just add something before you go? I know we've had you for the 30 minutes. Yeah. But I do want to say that your cover of I Am the Walrus.
Oh, thanks.
Good. Is out absolutely outstanding. I had goosebumps watching you and hearing you perform that song.
Thank you.
Like, man, you do John Lennon's part. You think, is he like embodied in you?
Well,
it's like amazing.
This is going to sound, take this for what it's worth. But, you know, look at what's happened this week with Now and Then coming out and just, you know, the outpouring of emotion that people have had over that song. And, you know, his voice is his, you know, his band, everything about that is the, it's the, it's the most miraculous thing that's happened in our lifetime, or happened in my lifetime. And it's gone on to people who weren't even born when they were together. And I've had a kind of a fortunate thing happen in my life, because my very first album I got to make in New York, and it was on 52nd Street, that great studio there. And I was right near the Dakota building. So I would walk by there, and it was just early 19, it was 81. And so it was just a year after, or within the first year after he'd gone. And so you feel this kind of kindred spirit, but you do with musicians. As a musician, that happens anyway. But then my second album, Strange Animal, the one I was referring to, I got to make that in Ringo Starr's home, which is Tittenhurst Park in England. And Tittenhurst Park is where John Lennon lived. This is the first place he lived with Yoko, and that's where he recorded Imagine. And so I got to make that album on all that same gear that was still there, the whatever he'd left behind. And, you know, obviously Ringo was living there, so he often came into the studio, very encouraging. And so that happened. And then the following year, I wound up going to a thing where I bought one of his lithographs. I bought it actually from Yoko. And then there's a few other, you know, odd little things that, but then when I did I Am the Walrus with Styx, shortly after that, May Pang, I met her, and we had all kinds of conversations about him. So they've been, and then I met Sean Lennon actually one night as well. I don't know if you remember, it was at a Brian Wilson concert. So there've been kind of, and I met Cynthia too. The only one I haven't met is Julian.
Julian's mom. Yeah.
And what a great book she wrote, just a book called John. So I've been really fortunate to have that tiny little connection, you know, that we all have in a some way with Beatle music.
Well, Julian's recently resurfaced. I would love to see you and Julian do a song together.
That'd be great.
I swear to God, when I hear I Am the Walrus, I'm like, man, if you somehow can incorporate that into a live show again,
we haven't played it in a little while. That good suggestion. Maybe we put that into the Vegas show.
With the Cirque du Soleil thing there, that's perfect.
Yeah, you're right. Right across the street. You're right. Yeah, I'll bring it up. I'll bring it up at the next board meeting.
If I see it on the set list played, I'll look
at myself. This will be for you, Don.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Hey, Dean, I'm looking at your guitars back there. So you got a Rickenbacker. You got is that a Martin or a Taylor behind you there?
It's a Taylor.
That's a Taylor, yeah. Right? A Gibson amp. Now, the mask that's there.
Yeah, is the mask on top of the Gibson? Yeah, just a luchador mask.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, my daughter was down in Mexico, and I've always talked about getting one, so she's like, I'll get him one.
Is it luchador like a wrestler?
Yeah,
a
wrestler. Yeah.
Okay, now I know what a luchador is. Great.
I just learned that too. Thanks, man. That's
what was the movie? Nacho Libre.
Nacho Libre. Yeah. Well, I love that a guy that's masterful on keyboards was asking about your guitars. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you play guitar too, Gavin?
I do. Not as well as guitar is my second instrument. Let's call it that. But funny enough, sometimes, you know, like I'm married to the piano, but my guitar friends, my guitar is my mistress, I guess, because your second instrument, you'll come up with things on it that will surprise you, because I'm not as adept at playing it, but I have written a couple of songs that have done really well on it. And when I start the solo tour next week in my Gowan shows, I play guitar in about four or five songs in that one.
Is that just going to be in Canada? That tour?
Yeah, it'll be, there's eight shows in Quebec. So I got to brush off my French a little bit, then a couple in Ottawa. And then Massey Hall in Toronto is the final show that I'll do. Historic venue. I've seen everyone there.
Before I say goodbye to you, I just, it reminded me, when you talk about Alex Lifeson saw the thing, I wonder if he went to like Getty afterwards, like, dude, you need a rotating thing for your keyboard. Alex is funny, right? I'm sure you're like, hey, Getty, you know, this guy Gowan's got this rotating thing, man.
Yeah, he's got enough stuff going on there on that stage. Yeah, he
does. You see, we were managed, we had the same manager for 14 years. That's how why I had access and asked Alex if he would be on the album. That's but so awesome. Yeah, no, I think they weren't as drawn to the contraptions, I guess, as I was.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine Neil spinning around either. Like,
he had to spin around.
He spun the show. In his solo, the thing spun, but not while he was playing, though.
Yep.
I think it spun in the middle of his drum solo.
Yeah, he had 360 degrees of drums.
That's right, because he had the electronic kit, I think, on the other side.
Oh, yeah, you're right. See, yeah. So Neil went, no, Getty, you don't have to worry about it. I got it. I got the
routine. I got that covered. Yeah, they covered a lot of ground, those three fellows.
Well, again, everyone, go see them at the Venetian. If you need an excuse to go to Vegas, Gowan will be there. And give some of your winnings to Gowan.
Please do.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Please do. I accept them all.
Thank you so much for your time.
I don't have a luchador mask. It's time I got one.
Yes.
Everybody should have one.
Everyone should have. We should wear them for our interviews, man. I'll get one, and then we'll talk to people with that thing on.
I like the idea. It's better than a facelift.
Yeah. Very true.
Thanks a lot, Gowan. Have a great night, man.
Thank you very much for your time.
Bye, Don. All the best.
Thank you. You too, man. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.